challenging for David and I as well. And so we have made it through it by hook and crook. And hopefully you've gained some things from it as we have gone through it. David's got one more class after tonight, and I've got one more that'll be a review. And that'll wind it up next Wednesday night, Lord willing. As we begin this lesson, here's some things we need to remember as we study the Jews in the years of silence. In this particular time frame, we have the Syrian Empire, and it's beginning to crumble at this time. And you can see the empire right here of Syria. It's beginning to crumble due to the Maccabean revolt that was so prevalent in the land of Israel. And also, at the same time, there were forces on both sides, and that would be the Parthian Empire and the Roman Empire. Now, they were beginning to gain strength at this particular time. Rome has been watching the conflict between Syria and the Jews, just waiting to see who's going to kind of take over, and they'd be able to pounce on whoever's left. So we actually see that the Roman Empire, at a little bit later, encompasses a tremendous amount of area. All the way around, this whole area is going to be the Roman Empire in the near future. Rome had been asked by the Maccabees to come and help them as they engaged in these fights and so forth in the land of Israel. And Rome would promise, you know, well, we're coming. You just go ahead and work. Do the best you can, you know, more or less. And they never did actually go and help the Maccabees in that particular area. But we want to look at some traditions that the Jews developed during this particular time frame, the origin of many of the different sects of the Jews that have come about. And these changes are prevalent even in the New Testament. Matthew, the 15th chapter, in verse 2, and the Pharisees had come to Jesus and said, "Why do thy disciples transgress the traditions of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread." Well, Jesus answers them. He says, "Why do you also transgress the covenant or commandment of God by your tradition?" Of course, what they had done was they had taken money that should have been to take care of their parents and honoring them, and they gave it to the Lord, called it Corban. And so that's what Jesus was saying, that you have transgressed the commandment of God. You haven't honored your father and mother. And so you've made the commandment of God of none effect, basically. So when the Pharisees and Sadducees ask him in Mark 7, verse 6, basically kind of the same question, "Why walk not thy disciples according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with unwashed hands?" And that was something that they ran into a lot of times during the days of Jesus while he was on earth. And the Pharisees questioned him many times about things that their traditions. As we look at the Jewish history, in Exodus 24, 19 through 24 chapters, the covenant of God with his people was established. You remember, Jehovah would be their God and they would be his people. As a matter of fact, in 19, 5 and 6, it says, Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and holy nation. Exodus 19, 5 and 6. Of course, we realize that through the years and that God was with them, that the people, of course, failed in their commitment to follow God's commandments. They turned to idolatry. And, of course, eventually it got to the point where God said, enough. I've had all I can take. And so he sends them away into captivity. After their return from captivity, they still fail to become the peculiar treasure that God had envisioned. They took spouses from the people of the land. We find in Ezra, the 9th chapter, verse 1 and 2. The people of Israel and the priests and Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the lands with respect to abominations of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, Ammonites, Moabites, Egyptians, and Amorites. They have had something to do with all of these different nations of people, and all of them were idolaters. You remember, that's why God had told the Israelites, go in and wipe them out, because they will be, they'll be a thorn in your flesh. And I shouldn't put my hand up there. That's all right. They'll be a thorn in your flesh, more or less, because they're gonna drag you into idolatry and other things. And God tried to tell them that that's what would happen to them. And we find that Ezra instructs the people to separate themselves from their foreign wives, and we know that they did that, and also their children who were born to them, they separated from them as well. But he encouraged them to separate morally and spiritually from the people of the land. Over time, a portion of the Jews took the thought of separation to an extreme. And this is possibly the origin of the Hasidim, or the pious ones, as we will look at a little bit later. These individuals continued to pursue the idea of obeying the law very carefully. They were very careful to obey the law. Their thoughts were founded on these following precepts. And that was a fear of not obeying God would bring his curse upon them as it had when they worshiped idols. So their fear was that obeying God would bring his curse. And then another thought was that if they obeyed, the thought was their obedience would bring God's blessing on them if they obeyed him and did what he said. And it would obligate God in their thoughts. It would obligate God to bless them in their obedience. The position of the high priest became more corrupt, and the pious ones, or the Hasidim, it's called, actually developed the idea that they were a kingdom of priests. And we'll look at that a little bit as we go on. The pious ones, those were actually the Pharisees, and we'll look at that in a minute. But they decided they would conduct their everyday lives so that they could offer their obedience to God as a sacrifice. So their obedience, when they would do God's command, to them that was, okay, I've done my sacrifice to God. Well, they structured their obedience with rituals, and so they're praying and fasting and washing of hands and many other things had to follow elaborate ceremonies in order to sacrifice to God. So, they set out to reduce every possible law to a series of rules so that they could know how to obey each law. So they set up rules so that they would know exactly what to do, you know. And they wanted to, you might say, build a fence around the law. And that way there wouldn't be a chance for them to get into sin by not obeying the law. They if you busted through the fence, that was against the law as well. So it was to guide them exactly where and how to walk. From this concept of building a fence came the following statements, or what they called halakha, which is a collection of the traditions and rules, the Haggadah was comprised of parables, folklore, history, and similar materials. Midrash, is to provide spiritual or scriptural pretext to justify oral tradition. So you see, there's some things going on that's just outlandish in a sense. But during the years of silence and continuing through the days of the New Testament, these rules and traditions were oral. They were given orally from one person to the next, from the priest to the people and those kind of things. They were given orally. But they came to be considered as binding and sacred as the scriptures themselves. The rabbis, scribes, and Pharisees argued every minute detail about each law and each tradition, making them more complex with each year that passed. So they would redo them, basically, and make them more and more difficult to follow. The oral traditions were not written down until about AD 200. And that's when Rabbi Judah Hanasi wrote the Talmud. The Mishnah was a supplement, get that quotation mark, supplement to the Old Testament, and is mainly an interpretation of the written law of the Bible. You can see how that could be very detrimental in writing a supplement to the Old Testament. We have people that make such things today, a supplement to the New Testament as well. Gemara was also consisted of interpretations of the laws of Mishnah, Halakha, and Haggadah. There were two different versions of the Talmud, the Palestinian Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud. Then we come to the Pharisees, a little bit about them. During the reign of the Seleucid kings, the pious ones, or the Pharisees, or Hasidim, strongly resisted efforts to corrupt their religion. They resisted efforts to corrupt their religious support the Maccabean revolt. They just refused to help the Maccabean revolt. Once the revolt was successful, or they did help them, I'm sorry, and then once it was successful, then they withdrew from them. They didn't help them any longer, but they helped them while it was to their benefit, if you might want to put it that way. The term Pharisee actually means separated ones. Josephus places the origin of the Pharisees in the time of Jonathan Maccabees, the successor of Judas Maccabees, about 160 to 143 B.C. A clear break between the Pharisees and the Maccabees occurred in the days of John Hyrcanus in 134 to 104 B.C. The Pharisees, the separated ones, actually became an opposition party to the Hasmonean family, the aristocrat, and they were well supported among the common people. Since concepts like justice and mercy are hard to measure, the Pharisees looked more to the law that they could look at and see something. Things they weighed, same things they counted, things they measured. Those are the kind of things that they would look to actually, they could actually sink their teeth into, if you want to put it that way. But we find that in Matthew 23 and 24, and we'll look at that in just a minute. But it's also noted that Paul was of the strictest of the sects of our religion. If you remember, in Acts 26 and verse 5, Paul says, "They knew me from the first, if they were willing to testify that according to the strictest sect of our religion, I live a Pharisee." And if you look at Matthew 23, you'll note that it said, Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithes of mint, anise, and cumin, and neglect the weightier matters of the law, which be justice, mercy, faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides, strain out a gnat, swallow him. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence." But we see what's going on. And now let's look at the Talmud. It's a list of seven categories that the Pharisees looked at. The Pharisees was one who would parade good deeds. They would look what I've done. They wanted everybody to parade. They wanted to parade around. The ones who looked, let business wait in order to do a good deed. There were also ones who walked into a wall to keep from looking at a woman. Thought that was kind of interesting. But avoid looking at a woman that was passing by. They just went straight into a wall. Keep their eyes straight ahead, in other words. There was one who would false humility, walk with his head down all the time, you know, that way. And some who asked that good deeds be he might do, that would reckon as canceling out some of the neglects they had. You know, we kind of think about the Catholics doing something similar to this, and used to anyway, where they pay so much, and you could do it going in sin or whatever. I don't know if they still do that or not, but at one time they used to. These are also ones who being a terror of God, and also ones who, like Abraham, also love God. As we look at the Sadducees, Sadducees developed about the same time as the Pharisees, and they were favorable to the Greek cause, and thus did not participate in the early phases of the Maccabean revolt. They wanted the Greeks to come in. They sympathized with the Greeks. And they wanted Judea to actually compromise with the Greeks and their political welfare. And they saw no harm in actually adopting some of the Greek customs that came their way. a party of aristocratic priests, and had very little popularity among the common people. They believed in God and the law, but rejected the tradition of the scribes and Pharisees. The Sadducees also identified by Josephus as the upper social and economic echelon of Judean society. But you see, the Sadducees were totally different from the Pharisees. We hear Jesus talking about, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Both of them were hypocrites in their actions and the way they actually obeyed the law. The religious responsibility of the Sadducees included the maintenance of the temple in Jerusalem. They did not look for a future reward for obedience. They did not believe in the resurrection or in angels or anything that was beyond this life. This life was it for the Sadducees were concerned. In Acts 23 and verse 8, that neither did they believe in resurrection, angels, or spirits. But the Pharisees acknowledged them all. So they're totally different from their beliefs in a lot of ways than the Pharisees. You see that there are conflicts between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and this is just some of it. We'll get a little bit more into it. Conflicts between the Pharisees. The Pharisees, their class of people would be the poor people. The Sadducees would be the wealthy people, those higher upper echelon folks. Their culture, the Pharisees was against the Hellenization, but the Sadducees supported the Hellenization or the acceptance of Greek culture and customs. Pharisees in their worship, they accepted the oral tradition, the Talmud, and the Sadducees recognized only the written Torah, or the literal interpretation. Then we come to the Essenes, and they're another group of people as well, a group who thought the Pharisees were extremely liberal. You can look at the Pharisees and think about some of the things they required. Remember, they counted the leaves on the trees, and anise and cumin and all those kind of things to make sure they gave the right tithes. And yet, the Essenes thinks that the Pharisees, they're extremely liberal. So they lived in various cities, but congregated in communal life. So they had their little commune here and there and yonder throughout the land. They dedicated to asceticism, in other words, severe self-discipline and avoidance of all forms of indulgences, typically for religious reasons. They voluntary poverty, daily immersion. That was a ritual that they would go through each day. Abstinence from worldly pleasures, including celibacy. That they were, this was part of their fourth day. If we look at the Essenes, Josephus further adds that the Essenes ritually immersed in water every morning. They ate together after prayer. They devoted themselves to charity, benevolence. They forbade the expression of anger, studied the books of the elders, preserved secrets, and were very mindful of names of angels kept in their sacred writing. Commonly associated with and thought to have recorded Dead Sea Scrolls. that's found in 1947. If you remember, these were found in caves around the Dead Sea, around the Qumran area on the western side of the Dead Sea, the Qumran area. There are several caves in the area that these were found and recorded. And we also, this is a copy of the writing of the Dead Sea, some of them, of the Dead Sea Scrolls, that were found in 1947. There were several partial books that were found at that particular time. Here we have a little further detail about the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the Essenes. The Sadducees, their social class, was the priest and aristocrat. The Pharisees would have been the common people that they had dealings with, more or less, and the Essenes. The Essenes were actually unknown at this particular time. The authority the Sadducees recognized would have been the priest, and the Pharisees would recognize disciples of the wise, and the Essenes would be teachers of righteousness, would be their authority that they would look to. The practices of the Sadducees emphasized on priestly obligations. The Pharisees were application of priestly laws to non-priests. And of course, the Essenes were the inspired exegesis that they practiced. Also, we find that Sadducees' calendar involved the lunar solar calendar, and also the Pharisees, the same thing. But the Essenes only recognized the solar calendar. The Sadducees, as far as Hellenism, they were for it. And the Pharisees were kind of selective in what they would deal with as far as Hellenism. They didn't like it basically at all. And then we have the Essenes, they were totally against any of the Hellenism that was there. The Hasmonean, whatever, Sadducees opposed the usurpation of the priesthood by non-Zodokites. And the Pharisees, they opposed the usurpation of the monarchy. Essenes were personally opposed to Jonathan Maccabees, who was for all of this. The Sadducees, as far as their free will, they were for a person having a free will in their thoughts and actions. The Pharisees, they were mostly for free will, but not totally. And the Essenes were not for free will at all. Sadducees and afterlife, they did not believe that there would be an afterlife. The Pharisees believed in the resurrection, and Essenes believed in spiritual survival. Their Bible, Sadducees would be the literalists. The Pharisees would be sophisticated, scholarly interpretations, and the Essenes would be inspired exegesis. You see a whole lot of things going on with these different groups. But the Sadducees, as far as the oral Torah, the Sadducees didn't think of any such thing. They did not go along with the oral Torah. The Pharisees did. They counted it equal to the written Torah that was there. And of course, the Essenes, they were for the inspired exegesis. All right. I know that was kind of tough going, but it had a lot to tell you about the different groups, and hope you got a little out of that. Zealots or Zealots probably did not appear until after the first century, after Rome actually took control of Judea. Exceedingly zealous for the establishment of the Jewish state, they believed that they should fight to establish God's predicted kingdom. Does that remind you of? Does that kind of remind you of things going on today a little bit, even, or as that goes? But it was a glorious political state. Of course, you remember Simon Zelotes, one of Jesus' apostles, was a zealot, and he was one of the 12 apostles. Zealots played an important role in the downfall of the Jerusalem in AD 70. By that time, they had laid aside all rule of proper conduct and had actually become a group of terrorists. Boy, that just, if that doesn't hit home, I don't know what does. In today's world, there's terrorists everywhere. And that's what they were, and it was the downfall of the of Jerusalem, or part of it, at that time. They apparently started many of the riots that broke out in the first century. The Jewish High Court of the Sanhedrin may have been in existence as early as 200 B.C., and we read about the Sanhedrin in the New Testament. The apostles and Jesus both dealt with that. When Syria took control of Judea from Egypt, the name Sanhedrin is a Hebrew spelling of the Greek word that means a senate or a governing body. They formed as part of the local force of law. The Sanhedrin is mentioned in the Gospels, and in relation to the Acts of the Apostles in Acts 4 and also in Acts 22. The number of the Sanhedrin elders varied from 70 to 72 men of the Sanhedrin Council. The number may have come from history where the 70 elders were actually sent to ratify the old law in Exodus 24 and verse 1. Remember, Moses and Aaron and 70 elders went up into the mountain, and that's when the old law, when they met with God, ate, ratified the old law. So what can we learn from this study? Well, we need to obey God's command, not adding to or taking from. That's what happened to these folks. They were doing their tradition. They were adding to things that you had to do. You had to wash your hands before you could eat. And it had to be done, you could just go in places, you know, like we do today, you know, just go in, wash your hands, and done with it, go eat. No. That's not what they had. They had a ceremonial type washing. You know, I don't know what all it was, but you just imagine they probably had a bowl there and they would wash their hands and who knows what all they did. I don't. But it was something that was more ceremonial involved in with that. Not only just washing hands, but several other things as well, which was not required of the, in the law. Jesus told them at that one time, you know, you transgress the God's law by your traditions. And we gotta be careful that we don't do things today as a tradition and require that to be done. Give an example. Years ago, the elders decided, well, we're going to close the service with a song. Well, I had a little old lady that came to me after service that night, and she said, that's just not right. You can't do that. We're supposed to have a prayer. Well, a prayer's fine before you go. But the thing is, that's not a requirement. And if the elders decide to put that aside for one or two nights, whatever it might be, and just close with a song, that's okay. It's all right to do that. It's not a requirement. So to say that is law, that you've got to have a prayer at the end of service, it's not there. Yes, it's good to have, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have to do it in that fashion. We don't have an example where that has to be done. Anybody got a comment along that line? Okay. That's just one thing that happened here that I remember that did happen. In regard to this, God says obey his commandments, not adding to or taking from. We look at Revelation, the 22nd chapter. And there we read, I let it long, you fix it, huh? Thank you, James. In Revelation 22nd chapter in verse 18, says, "For I testify to everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book, if anyone adds to these things, God will add to him the plagues that are written in this book. And if anyone takes away from these words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part of the book of life from the holy city, from the things which are written in this book." It's very, very important that we do just what God says, only what he says, no more, no less. It's so important. All right. We're just about out of time. Anybody got a comment? I know we went through a lot of stuff tonight, and I'm sorry. Pretty technical, and I don't know of any other way to go through it. Thank y'all for your time and patience and understanding.